Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Epic Podcast. Introducing your hosts, Nelson Lugo and Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the spacious and beautiful Studio 6C in Astoria, Queens, this is the third episode of the Epic Podcast. I'm your host, Nelson Lugo.
And I'm your other host, Schaefer the Dark Lord.
What up, Schaefer?
Oh, hey, Lugo. How you been, man?
I'm good.
I feel like I haven't seen you in a month.
That's not true. We've actually seen each other.
I see you almost every day.
Well, that's pushing it, but it
feels like almost every day.
I don't know how to take that. That could be really sweet or really demeaning. Not quite sure which.
I'm doing well. Fall is in the air.
Fall is definitely in the air. Yes.
Fall is my favorite season, so I'm very excited that fall is in the air.
Oh, really? I'm more of a spring person myself.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds unlike you. I figured winter would be a season for you. It's barren and it's sad.
Dude, come on. I am no longer a sad sack of a human being anymore.
I know, but it's still old habits die hard. For me, I still associate.
Fair enough. I mean, there was a very long, protracted period.
But I'm excited. I like when the leaves change. I like Halloween.
Yeah. Oh, I love Halloween.
I like Thanksgiving.
I fucking love me some Halloween.
I like my birthday. So it's a good time of year for me.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah, you've got like the nice trifecta of wonderful sort of celebratory days in that time.
True.
Yeah.
Since our last episode,
right,
which was a month ago,
right,
let me ask you a question.
What's that?
What you been up to, Nelson?
I'm so glad you asked. I mean, the past 30 or so days have been sort of chock-a-block with all kinds of wonderful, wonderful things. Like we had the New York Comic Con, which was fantastic. I didn't get to go the entire time this year because I was just entirely too busy. But the time that I did spend there, I saw some amazing things. I saw some great booths. I saw some great cosplayers. I love New York Comic Con. One of these days, I'm going to have to head out to San Francisco, but I really do enjoy.
It's a San Diego.
Sorry. Yes, San Diego. Thank you. And then we did Rock Comic Con. You and I did that.
That's true. It was a Comic Con after party on the Friday night of Comic Con. Right. We both performed. We played with H2 Awesome.
I did. Yeah. I'm a big fan of H2 Awesome.
The Double Clicks featuring Molly Lewis.
They are adorable.
I just want to send a big shout out to Angela and Aubrey, the Weber sisters. There's no chance that they're listening to this.
No, but if they are,
they were wonderful.
I totally had a big crush on those two ladies when they were performing.
Nasty Canasta performed in the
show. Yes, she did. Yeah. Yeah. And she performed her I guess, world famous Poison Ivy act at this point.
It was a good time. I enjoyed performing for the pretty nerdy people.
Yeah, it was great. And what else? In that time, some big things were happening, or rather are happening, for Epic Win Burlesque as an entity. Epic Win Burlesque was nominated by Time Out New York Magazine for being the best burlesque in New York City.
That's true. The actual category was best not safe for work / after hours burlesque.
It was a bunch of slashes. It was best burlesque / not safe for work.
Not safe for work night.
Yes, not safe for work night. Yes, and we were we were up against some pretty damn good shows. Like Gotham Burlesque was up there, and
Badass
was up there.
Naked Girls Reading.
Some really fantastic shows. And so I feel very honored to be sort of nominated in that astute company. I don't know who won. Actually, by the time this podcast goes live, I will probably know by then. And you will find out either through my Facebook or Twitter feed that I'm a happy, happy man or a fucking sore loser. We'll see which.
Good luck to you, Epic Win Burlesque.
Thank you. And if you voted, thank you so very much. And if you didn't vote, go fuck yourself.
Gosh, that's really harsh.
Yeah, I'm a judgmental prick. What else we did? Epic Win Burlesque plotted our fourth season that's coming up soon.
It's really 4 years.
Well, it's been 3 years
Oh, this is going to be the fourth
year. This is going to be the fourth season, fourth year. And we're doing twice as many shows as we did last year. So I did the count. It turns out we're actually doing 42 shows next season.
LOL.
Not on purpose. We didn't work it out that way. It's just how it worked out with all the venues and all of the shows that we're doing. No, that's not counting like out of town stuff. That's not counting Nerdapalooza or any of that stuff. But the shows we are doing in New York, there are 42 of them.
That is a lot of shows. You know, it feels like it was just a mere 3 years ago that we produced our first Epic Win show. Feels even more recently that we were doing four shows a year, yeah. And I was complaining about all of the work constantly, and yeah. So I quit. And yeah. Now you and Mary are doing 42 shows in a year.
Yeah.
What a bunch of masochists.
Well, you know, after the oppressive chains of the Schaefer regime were cast off.
And let's be honest here, they were oppressive.
They were quite oppressive. You know, we got under the thumb of Emperor Schaefer, and we decided to let our wings unfurl, and, you know, this baby's going to fly.
Well, I'm very excited for you guys.
Well,
I'm also
you.
Very excited because I have had a sneak peek at the upcoming season.
Yeah.
And I will be hosting a number of these
shows. Yes, you are. Yeah, you're back.
Well, let's hold on.
Well, back in a limited capacity. You know
I like being a hired gun to host the shows.
You are nothing more than a hired gun.
I don't like doing all of the work.
No, obviously not.
Because I am a stress monster.
Yes, you
and
are.
I need to do other things. So, yes. But I am very excited to come back. There's a bunch of great shows, and I'm excited to host another.
Yeah, and a few of them we're actually going to be co-hosting again. So
that's right. And that's always fun.
I'm really excited for that because... I've hired other hosts and I've been on stage with other people and all of those are wonderful and fun in their own right. But, you know, I started it with you and I'd like to keep doing stuff with you.
Gosh, you get all misty-eyed.
Dude, I love you in like the broest way possible.
That's terrific. That's really terrific.
But even bigger news, Epic Win has announced officially that we will be producing a 3-day nerdy burlesque festival next year.
Am I correct in thinking that this is the first? There are a lot of burlesque festivals
around
the country.
There are tons of burlesque
Lots
festivals.
Lots of them.
Yes.
Am I correct in thinking this is the first nerd-centric specific burlesque
yes,
festival?
Yes, this is the world's first nerdy pop culture-inspired burlesque festival.
Wow,
yes.
That's terrific.
Yeah. Because I'm doing it because nobody talked me out of it. That's what's, I mean, I had a stupid idea. I said, hey, on top of all the other work I'm doing, how about I add on this tremendous responsibility and ask people from all over the world to be a part of it? And no one at any point said, hey, Nelson, maybe you should, you know, maybe dial it down a little bit. Nobody stopped me.
I wasn't going to say it.
Nobody stopped me.
I wasn't going to say it. Because
and
because,
so now it's happening.
You know, I didn't stop you because I love slapstick comedy and I want to watch you pull your hair out and smoke come out of your ears and throw papers and stuff up the air. I want to watch all of that happen as you go through hell trying to assemble this thing.
Yeah,
and another thing, once you do announce more specific information and you start accepting applications from performers around the country.
Sure.
I would love to sit down with you and look through some of the applications with you.
Yeah,
that said, I'm not making any decisions.
No.
I just want to look at the applications and watch the videos with you.
Well, whether you want to be or not, you are actually part of the crew that's going to make this happen. You don't have much of a choice in this matter. I've already recruited you, so I already have jobs for you.
Are they hosting jobs?
Among others, yes.
What do you mean among others?
Among others. There's some back room administrative things that I'm gonna need you to do.
Are there rapping jobs?
Well, let's just put it this way. Of all the rapping that's going to happen, it'll be you.
That's terrific. You heard it here first, folks.
Yes.
I have the exclusive rapping contract.
You have the exclusive, and you have final say on any and all other rappings that happen, which will just be you.
Oh, that's terrific. I do like a little bit of power in my hands.
Yes.
So thank you very
so
much.
So you have complete control over everything that you are doing.
At last.
Right. But yeah, I mean, that's a lot of stuff. I mean, I can go on and on and on, but I mean, that's just, it's a huge, huge sort of year for Epic Win Burlesque, and I'm just kind of really excited.
I'm excited. I'm excited to see these shows.
Yeah, me too. Well, you know, we're going to bring back some old favorites, like stuff we haven't done again. Like, we're going to bring back Ghostbusters, and we're going to bring back the Video Game Vixen show, and we're going to, you know, there'll be like a dedicated Star Wars show, a dedicated Star Trek show, so it's going to be a really good time.
Terrific.
But let me ask you a question, Schaefer.
Go on.
What have you been up to?
Mostly sad isolation in my darkened apartment, talking to myself.
All right, so business as usual.
Yes.
Okay.
I guess the main thing that's happened since the last podcast is I finally got my free album of B-sides released.
Yay!
On the internet. Yes, it finally came out.
Listenership, I am officially negating the contract out on Michael Kill. Please do not kill him.
Please, please. He's a lovely young man. He did some good work. He mastered the record. He created one of the remixes. He mixed one of the songs. He did a great job.
I really have to say. And this might be a biased opinion. I really like Junk Drawer a lot.
Thank you very much.
I really do.
In case I haven't mentioned it, the free record is called Junk Drawer. It is 11 tracks of material that I haven't properly released. Some of the songs have appeared on demo CDs.
Sure.
They sold on tours 7 years ago.
Right.
A couple of songs have appeared on compilations. There are a couple of remixes. There's a cover. There's a bunch of songs that are rife with samples so that I can never sell them. But it's a bunch of stuff that never got properly released. So right. I put it all together and I released it for free on Bandcamp, and you can go download it now. And that link is SchaeferTheDarkLord.bandcamp.com. It's the only thing available. You can't miss it.
I really love your Dinner with Jell-O.
Thank you very much. That song is 9 years old.
I am digging the hell out of it.
You know, here's a little, I'm going to tell you this quick little anecdote about that song.
Sure.
About a thing that happened because of that song. I wrote that song. I'm a lifelong Dead Kennedys fan. The song My Dinner with Jell-O is about a fictional dinner date with a hero of mine, Jell-O Biafra.
Sure.
Former lead singer of the Dead Kennedys. So I wrote this song when I lived in San Francisco because it was about that time that I was getting into comedy, and I noticed that all of my other open mic comedy friends all had at least one impression in the repertoire, and I had no impressions. I don't do impressions. I had one, and it was Jell-O Biafra, and the average comedy audience did not know who Jell-O Biafra was.
I like how impressions were like the thing that was happening.
They weren't. No, it was mostly toilet humor, but everybody had one, and I had zero.
Okay.
So I'd started my rap act, and so I created this song basically so that I could show off the only impression that I could do with any amount of prowess, and I wrote this song, and I had a lot of fun doing it for many years. Now, I sent the song to Alternative Tentacles to get Jell-O's attention. Jell-O does not use email, so he did not respond to my emails, but rather he had a staffer.
Wait, he doesn't, he's a technophobe?
He's a Luddite. He does not use technology.
Oh, good gravy.
So he would respond to my emails, and again, this is now 7 years ago.
Right.
He was responding to my emails by basically dictating to a to a staffer to type emails to me. So they all read like telegrams.
I could
received
I could,
your song. Stop. Good work. Stop.
I kind of imagined him in like a wood paneled office, like, Miss McGillicuddy, take a letter. Dear Mr. Schaefer, in regards to your
But Jell-O did give me his endorsement. He liked the song. He was flattered.
Oh, excellent.
And I tried to get him to come to a number of my shows when I lived in San Francisco, but he could never make it.
Right.
Fast forward to, say, 2005. I've moved to New York, and I'm on tour with Kool Z, and we play a show in San Francisco. And I, again, like every show in San Francisco, I'd written to the staffers at Alternative Tentacles and said, please tell Jell-O that I'm going to be in town, knowing full well that he wasn't going to come.
Right.
So we go, and we play this show, and it's San Francisco, where audiences tend to historically indulge me a bit more. I get to do pretty long sets. So I do like an hour's worth of material at this show.
Wow.
And I don't do my Dinner with Jell-O because it's kind of tired at that point. I've been doing it for years and I wanted to do some new stuff. So we finish. I'm the last act and the lights come on and I turn around and I'm all sweaty and I'm picking up all my gear. I'm just gathering it up all into the box and people are milling about. And behind me, I hear this voice say, I can't believe you didn't play my goddamn song. And I turn around,
nice.
And there he is. So I panic, I grab the microphone, and I holler to the sound guy, turn off the house music, turn off the lights, I gotta do one more. And so I did get, in fact, to do the song for Jell-O, in the audience, and it was it was very magical.
Wow. Dude, that's an amazing story. Fuck.
Thanks. It was great. He was a really good sport about that song. I'll tell you what.
Well, I mean, I think it's full of tongue in cheek, and it's actually a really wonderful sort of love letter to him in a non creepy kind of way. So.
Big fan, lifelong fan.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks. So the response has been really good to Junk Drawer. A lot of people have downloaded it. I really appreciate it. I've gotten a lot of great feedback from my audience. People have been really supportive about it and have been really excited to get these songs that they haven't heard before. I know the material's old to me, but it's new material of mine for them because, by and large, this audience is not familiar with these songs.
All that material was just never available.
I've got a handful of old hardcore fans who had the CDRs that had a couple of those songs that had Cocaine, My Dinner with Jell-O.
Okay.
But a lot of the people, this is new. So they've really been supportive.
Oh, good.
However.
Oh, dear. Is this going to take a turn for the worse?
There's just something that I kind of want to address.
Okay.
That has really been kind of disappointing about this experience for me. And it hasn't been the majority of the experience, but it has happened with enough frequency that it's bummed me out. And it's this. I have, in my personal life, I have ranted to people about how social networking has, because of our access to the internet and being able to put out any self-indulgent ideas we want out there at will, has kind of turned us into a society of narcissists, just self-indulgent narcissists.
Yeah.
And also, to some extent, it's made us, I feel, compulsively critical. I feel because of things, because of the whole culture of a commenting system on YouTube and Facebook statuses and et cetera, that people will be critical only because they can.
Right.
Maybe lots of times
right.
criticism is warranted and is productive and is meaningful. But lots of times, it's just criticism for the sake of criticism. So although I got a lot of really warm responses from the majority of the audience that I released this album to, I got some criticism. And if it was criticism for not liking the material that I put out, that's fine. Again, valid criticism, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I got criticism for releasing the wrong material.
Wait, what?
Yes, I got a number of comments. Yes. I got a number of comments posted, as well as a number of direct messages.
That you put out the wrong material?
Yes.
What's the right material?
Well, I don't know. There were messages like, I know I have a fourth album in the works, a proper fourth album. It's a concept album. It's long behind schedule.
Sure.
And it is coming, and I'm working on it hard, you guys, and I'm going to spend... I'm continuing to spend all of my time working on it.
You don't leave your apartment for days on end working on this damn thing.
It's coming. The number of comments you post saying when's the record coming out isn't going to make it come any faster. You know what? When the record has a release date, you can be pretty sure it's going to be posted on every inch of my internet presence. Okay? Hassling me isn't going to make it faster. But I got a number of messages. There was one in particular where somebody wrote to me and said, when the album came out, when the free album came out, and said, oh, so disappointed. I thought that this was going to have Boo, I'm a Ghost on it. Sigh, thumbs down, frowny face.
Wait. Oh, okay. All right. That's.
Yes. I got another message that was like, oh, no Tom Girl? I has a sad.
Look, well, hold on. Is it possible that maybe you're being a little too sensitive? Like, they were expecting to hear a song that's not on there, and that maybe they're just expressing their disappointment on not having the song.
That's fine.
Yeah.
If it was tempered with, P.S., thanks.
Right. Because... It's a free album. You're complaining about a free album.
We're now so entitled that we are complaining about content that we are receiving for free.
Right.
You'll get Tom Girl and Boo, I'm a Ghost and Do Sex. You'll get those songs on the album that I'm working on.
So basically, you've had some positive feedback about their experience with Junk Drawer.
Yes.
But... you're very, very bothered by the fact that there are a small but vocal minority complaining about a free album.
Yes, that's accurate.
Sometimes I just want to punch the internet in the face. It's a free album.
Like, you know it's free. When you go to the page, there's a track listing. You could be like, oh, well, the song that I won isn't on this. I'll just leave. I'll just walk away. And you know what I won't do? Complain to the artist about it.
I mean, has the internet gotten so entitled to the point where even getting free things is not enough for them?
Well, not if it's if it isn't the right free things.
It has to. Oh, so it has to be the exact right free things. Otherwise, it's not worth their time to download something for free.
Also, to a very small handful of fans who had trouble with the downloading link or whatever unzipping program they had on their computer, and they had problems unlocking or downloading the material to the machines.
I suppose that
to
happens.
Those small handful of fans. Yeah, I don't work for Bandcamp. I know that
were they contacting you for technical support?
They were posting on my wall. I can't download junk draw on my computer. Fuck Bandcamp, frowny face. That's terrific. Perhaps it would be best directed
if you
to tech support at bandcamp.com.
Did you, you know what? Next time, just tell them, did you turn on and off your computer?
I'm not.
You got to do that at least once, at least.
Look, I'm old and cranky, guys. So things I get cranky about stuff. I know you want me to come to your town, but again, when you post on my wall that you want me to come back to Oklahoma, it's not going to get me there any faster.
Right. You know what? The fastest way to get Schaefer the Dark Lord to Oklahoma, hire him to perform in Oklahoma.
You heard it here first, folks.
That is the easiest and fastest way to make that happen. Also, just so you know, the fastest way to get me to Oklahoma is to hire me to perform in Oklahoma. My rates are far more reasonable than Schaefer the Dark Lord. Just saying.
But anyway, to everybody who's been really positive about the Junk Drawer release, thank you very much. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much. You guys mean the world to me, and I can't wait to get this new record out to you. You're going to love it.
Yeah, I think I liked it a lot. I really, really did. And you know what? I'm not just saying this because I'm biased. It was worth the wait. I really, you know, I think there's some excellent, excellent material on there. I like the remixes. I like the reimaginings of that stuff. And so, yeah, if you haven't downloaded it yet, go download it. It's free. If you like it, great. If you didn't like it, you didn't pay anything for it. So, you know, you lose nothing but the 2 minutes it took to click the download button.
And thanks again to Michael Kill of the Thought Criminals. Enjoy your life sans fear of assassination.
You squeaked by this time, Michael Kill. I will get you next time.
So.
Yes.
Are we still doing reader mail? Is that still a segment? I don't know.
Yeah,
the format from month to month.
No. I mean, we only got one real email. We got a bunch of new titles for your upcoming album, but mm-hmm. I think that joke
we're putting that to bed.
That joke has run its course.
The album has a title. I'm not telling you, but
the album
one.
Has a title, and Schaefer the Dark Lord is no longer entertaining joke titles, even though I just came up with one right now that I think you should listen to.
Nope.
Here it is. The Ides of Mark.
I'm going to take that one under consideration.
All right. Okay. So here we go. So in keeping with this whole like internet entitled criticism thing, I got one email, which is kind of weird. I got one email in 30 days. I have no idea how many people are listening to this podcast.
Four.
Four people. Okay. Yes. I know two personally. So maybe
six.
So it's six. So there are at least six confirmed listeners. If you like the show, write us. Tell us you like the show. If you have questions, ask us. The email is epicpodcast@gmail.com.
While you read this email, I'm just going to go ahead and I'm a little hungry.
Oh, okay.
If you don't mind, why don't you just handle the response email?
Yes.
I'm going to eat this crunchy Granny Smith apple.
Oh.
And I'm going to leave
delicious.
This one to you.
Well, this email, it was weird. It was it was kind of all over the place, like complimentary, but critical at the same time. He starts off by saying, and I don't want to reveal the name because I don't want to call this person out on the internet, but he says, he has to say that he really loves the podcast. So he starts off with something nice. And then he says that to you, Schaefer, that if you're really into Assassin's Creed, you might consider getting a Vita because apparently there's a bundle coming with Assassin's Creed and a thing, which is kind of odd because you're on the internet and we already know this. Basically. But that's fine. I mean, he said he's making a suggestion. And then he starts off by saying, I hate to be the kind of nerd who does this, but I have a problem with this statement on so many levels. In much the same way, when someone says, I'm not racist, but you know the next words out of this person's mouth are going to be the most racist, fucked up things you could possibly imagine. So, like, here's the thing. I don't like stubbing my toe indoors. So I go out of my way to make sure that doesn't happen. So if you hate to be the kind of person who says things that are probably not favored by people, then you should probably not say them. Just saying, internet. But he says, I hate to be the kind of nerd who does this, but there were a few errors that Lucas Siegel made in the last episode. And he even goes on to, so far to say that, you know, he's going to, you know, insert Simpsons comic book guy voice in here. So he already knows that he's going to go into the deep end of the fact-checking trolling pool that that necessitates this. He said that he stated in issue 12 of Batman only had one artist, blah, 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 blah. He says there's more. I'm going to take his word for it because I honestly really don't care. He also said that Lucas Siegel should be here to defend himself, but this is all basically all hate against Lucas Siegel. He said Lucas Siegel said the year that this year was Spidey's 70th anniversary, and that it's actually the 50th, which I guess he said that. I don't know. Does it matter in the grand scheme of things? And he said something about the... He wanted to correct something about the PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale. I don't remember what it was, but apparently Lucas got that wrong as well. I guess that's all fine, because ultimately that's kind of keeping us honest. That's keeping there's fact-checking involved. I can only imagine that either he's like a deep-cut nerd and this stuff is already in his brain, or he's sitting there listening with a pad, like writing stuff down to check on Google, which... I guess is a thing. I don't know. But then he goes on to say that in terms of like the guests that we could have on our show, he would like to toss his hat into the ring to be a guest on our show. Okay. I guess. Here's a pro tip for Epic Win, the Epic Podcast, Schaefer the Dark Lord and Nelson Lugo. If you want to be in our good graces and become, I guess, involved in our inner circle of things, you probably don't want your first message to us to be an exceedingly long email where you fact check everything that we've done wrong. Now, that's not to say that fact checking isn't valid. I mean, if I say something blatantly wrong, please let me know. But if you want to be a part of the shenanigans that goes on here, you probably want to leave that for another time. Just saying. You know what I mean? I'm sure he would be an excellent guest. I'm sure he would have a lot to say and a lot of opinions. But quite frankly, no. Here's the thing. All the people we have on our show, all of the guests, all of the people we will invite here are people who are really going to suck up to us, because we are needy and we are shallow. And quite frankly, I didn't get enough love as a child, so I need all the love and attention from everybody around me. So thank you. Again, we welcome any and all emails. And if we're blatantly wrong, then please let us know. If you want to be on the show, then also please let us know, just not in the same email. How's that? That's a pro tip from Nelson Lugo and Schaefer the Dark Lord about the Epic Podcast.
Can I add something else to the email?
Sure.
Yeah. Because I know when we first started announcing the email, epicpodcast@gmail.com.
Epicpodcast@gmail.com.
The first thing that you put out there, you suggested to people that they write in and suggest album titles for me for my new album.
Yeah.
Well, you guys, I love that you've suggested a number of them, but the record's got a title. I'm not going to tell you what it is now, but we'll figure it out later. But I have a new thing that they should suggest to us.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, crap.
Nelson Lugo needs new catchphrases. Because I feel, although his catchphrases are endearing and very much a part of him,
I don't understand.
A number of them
this.
Have gotten a few too many miles.
Really? Like
so,
what?
Oh, let's go through the list.
Oh, you actually have a list, don't you?
For example, Sweet Jumpin' Jehoshaphats.
That's pronounced Jehoshaphats.
Okay. Yeah. You got to let that one go.
No.
Yes. You're not a carny barker in the 30s. You gotta, as you want to be, you got to let that one go.
No, no. I live the life I want to live.
Here's another one you got to let go of. Holy fucking shitballs.
No, no. That's my favorite.
In fact, I think you need to swear less.
I think you need to judge me less.
I think that's valid. But holy fucking shitballs is, it's got two swears in it. And you say it all the time.
Fuck balls.
Oh, what else we got? Oh, good gravy. That's a big one.
Are you kidding me? What problem could you possibly have with good gravy?
Only the way you use it. Because you know when you use it, you use it a number of times, but it's pretty much become exclusively to use when you're eating. Specifically,
wait, what?
Yeah. You eat a bunch of food and then you belch and then you go, oh, good gravy.
Really?
Yeah, you need something else to say there in place of that.
Oh, man. I don't...
Like, Shazam! Don't recommend Shazam.
I don't ever want to say Shazam.
Okay, and the last one that you got to let go of...
Oh, God.
...is this one. That's not a thing that happens. You say that all the time.
I don't know. I don't know what's more disturbing. The fact that you have compiled a list of catchphrases, but that you have ranked them to some semblance of acceptability.
That was a countdown from 4 to 1, too. One.
Oh my God, they're from like worst to least worst, or
no, least to worst.
Least to worst.
The that's not a thing that happens every 20 minutes when I hang out with you. How about boot skidoo? Let me recommend
no, that. That's horrible. No.
That's not what?
That's not a thing that happens.
Yeah. Full circle.
Look here. I don't even know how to respond to this. That's a horrible...
So if you have suggestions for new catchphrases for Nelson Lugo, write them to us at epicpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. Shazam and boot skidoo are off the list. So don't... That's... That's don't even vote on that. I'm terrified by the responses I'm going to get for this.
You're going to have to start using them.
No, I don't.
Okay.
And what's the same way that you're not going to use any of the album titles anybody suggests?
Fair enough.
I'm going to say holy fucking shitballs to the day I die now. In fact, I'm going to try and say it 20 times in this podcast.
So how about we take a little break from this and we get into the real meat and potatoes of the show and we
Wonderful.
Bring in this month's special guest.
I'm so excited.
We will be back in just a moment.
It's not a tragedy, nobody thinks so. It's not a tragedy, it's not a tragedy.
Mortality, it's inescapable. Wanna get out of it, nobody's capable. Get it stapled to the manila folder of your life. When the moment arrives, a pure certification of events. Birth, vaccinations, graduations, rent. Then when it's all over with, hope you get laid to rest underneath the noblest. Don't have to keep hustling on. Ashamed of your shamble like you done something wrong by swindling the reaper out of one size swipe or turning all the living into fun size bites. You can't help it, your life priorities left with your last breath and the enormity of this milestone isn't noted by your mourners. So too busy wishing you go back to the coroner.
You have to learn to live with the fact that you're dead. You have to learn to live with the fact that you're dead.
There's plenty of you now and plenty more coming, and some of them think they'll survive, so keep running. But sooner or later we all run out of time. The trick is to not get stuck 1 foot over the line. Nothing left but your viciousness. Maybe that's all you ever were. That's chrysalis led to the one true you, and it's hungry. Eat another neighbor of blood on your dungarees. The guns release bullets, you don't mind. Your gullet's so full it's divine. And this is like a miracle to linger past your passing. Blessing that's lasting, a hoard fast amassing. Please forgive loved ones who aren't missing. Your photo albums are not reminiscing. Remember what the preacher at your funeral said. It isn't quite a tragedy, you're not quite dead.
You have to learn to live with the fact that you're dead. You have to learn to live with the fact that you're dead.
So, listeners, we are about to get into our next segment talking about The Walking Dead. Forewarned, it is going to be very spoilery. So, if you don't want the comic books or the video game or the TV series spoiled for you, then maybe you want to sort of tune in and out as you see fit. But we will be talking in depth about all things Walking Dead.
Our guest on the program this month is the man responsible for coining and introducing into our collective lexicon the term nerdcore. He is also a beloved pioneer in the musical scene of the same name. Please welcome to the program rapper, nerd icon, philanthropist, billionaire, playboy, MC Frontalot.
Woohoo!
Thank you for having me.
Hello, Mr. Frontalot.
How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. Thank you so much for coming all the way to Queens.
Yeah. I don't mind. You guys have good tacos here.
Mm. True. True.
That really is pretty much the best selling point of this neighborhood is the taco truck right around the corner from the house.
I'm very glad you're here. I'm very glad that we got to, you know, you are the hardest working man in this thing you call Nerdcore. And I'm just glad you could find time in your busy schedule to come out down to, you know, Studio 6C and chat with us for a while.
Me too. And I'm glad that you told me that we were going to be doing it, because that inspired me to finally fire up my Steam account and grab all of the Walking Dead games and play them.
Well, cool. Are you caught up?
I'm caught up. Yeah.
Nice.
Very good. Well, then we're just going to go into it. Obviously, as we mentioned previously, we're going to be talking about The Walking Dead this month and the various properties under The Walking Dead banner.
Right. The cultural phenomenon that has become The Walking Dead franchise.
Of course, this month saw the premiere of season 3 of the AMC television series.
Watched it.
Yeah.
I did too.
You saw the season premiere then?
Yep. Oh, and I saw the second one too.
Yeah, Lugo is not...
I'm not, for reasons we will get into momentarily, I have not watched the second episode.
You've read the comics, though.
I've read the comics up until the 10th trade paperback. I haven't gotten any further than that.
I don't know quite how they're divided into the trades, but...
Yeah, they're five to six issues per trade, I think. It varies.
I'm pretty sure that in that case, you've seen the stuff that happens in last week's.
Yeah.
It's
all about, I mean, it's no spoiler to say that at the, you know, season 3 they find the prison, because it's like a big advertising point.
It is more like stuff from the comic than many of the other TV episodes have been, I thought.
That is true. The third season is much more true to the comic. Even when they take liberties, they're still just taking elements and putting them on other characters. For example, the unfortunate thing that we saw happen to Herschel Green in the past two episodes happened to Dale in the books.
Right, but Dale's already gotten chewed up.
Dale had to go.
Oh, what a hard... Dale's all right, well, look, I guess I'm just going to sort of spill this. The both of you have been fans of The Walking Dead, both in comic book form and in TV show. Since they both premiered, and so the over the course of the past two seasons, you've been watching these shows slowly but surely, with gaps in between. I haven't seen a single episode up until Schaefer decided to do this podcast, and so I've been binge watching and binge consuming all things Walking Dead for the past 3 weeks.
Did you go get like a small vinyl child's Walking Dead Halloween costume from Kmart?
No.
And try it on?
No, I didn't. I did.
Well,
not
then I don't think you really understand the intellectual property.
I did, you know, I did kind of torture him. I said, you have 3 weeks. He'd read the books. You were up to maybe, what, the ninth trade or something?
I was up to about the ninth trade. Hadn't seen an episode of the TV show.
Hadn't played a second of the video game.
No, not at all.
And I told him we were going to do this episode, so I said, you have 3 weeks to consume all of the narrative of all of these various properties.
So now I am half man, half tears. I cannot, after this podcast, I am not going to talk about, think about, or even in any way seek out any Walking Dead thing for at least a year. I can't.
So you're coming at it not so much from the position of the enthusiast as the position of the victim.
Well, because the two of you have had the luxury of time. You've had 2 years, at least with the TV show, to at least a week between episodes.
I gotta be totally honest.
Yeah.
I read the first few issues because I was in one of them, and my buddy Tony was drawing them, and I was excited for him that he got a book on Image. I was like, that's great. And I read a few of them. And then they changed artists, which caused me to be disillusioned.
Oh, dear.
Sure.
And I didn't pick them up again. And everybody was talking about how great they were. And I heard that the TV show was maybe going to happen. And that was like a year of that maybe going to happen that I'd just like hear about on G-Chat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I should say that. It was secret at the time. But I think now we know that the TV show is going to be produced.
That happened.
And is, in fact, in season 3. So I started watching the show when it came out, and I couldn't believe how great it was. But I didn't return to the comics until, like, beginning of last month. I read them all on my telephone on airplanes while cruising around between tour dates.
If you bounced when Tony Moore left the series, then that means you caught up from issue 6 up through issue 103. On your phone.
Mostly on my phone.
Well, then you guys are in a similar boat. You guys could maybe see the same therapist, because that's a lot. That's a lot of heartbreak to consume in a short amount of time.
I was loving it. I got to say, the writing in that comic really
it's
blossomed about 10 issues in.
Yeah.
And became compelling.
It did.
When they find the prison is when that story starts to open up and become, I guess, I mean, it for me, it became more, less about zombies and more about the human struggle. And that, for me, was the most interesting part of the whole thing.
Sure. And that's especially the way it is in the comics now. I don't think anybody has died by a bite in maybe 12 issues. It's just different camps of survivors at war with one another.
I guess going back to the TV show, the sheer hopelessness of season 1 into season 2, where just, you don't know what the hell's going to happen. People are dying left and right. And just, I was very heartened to see, because I was very leery about season 3. I didn't know if I wanted to watch season 3 at all, but I forced myself to watch it. And I'm very glad that I did, because it seems like it's, although the characters themselves are hardened and less prone to emotional outbursts, it seems like a more hopeful story. Like, the things are starting to go their way now. But, you know, we'll see how there are ups and downs. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's still a zombie apocalypse.
Everything's coming up daisies and daffodils.
It's all a trap. They've just given you, there have been a couple of moments, rare moments for the television series of hope in the last 2 episodes. It's all it's like, I've learned from the comics. It's all a trap. they give you a dozen issues where things are looking up, and you know what? Rick and his crew might really ride this thing out. And then everybody that you've loved for 5 years is dead in 4 panels.
Well, yeah, whoever you liked the most the last few issues, that's who's going to get it. I figured out the pattern.
Yeah, I know now that if there was a zombie apocalypse, I would be dead in the first 48 hours. I know that for a fact now.
Because you'd have bad access to drugs?
No, well, I lack the cardio for the kind of running one would need. Also, I already have health problems in a relatively normal world. So if I were faced with a life where medication was in short supply, I would be dead. You know, if the two of you were here and a zombie apocalypse happened, just shove me out the door as fodder so that you two can escape.
You don't know. You've got so much meat on you. We would put you in the fridge. We'd be stuck in this apartment for a long time.
Dude, no, don't eat me.
You could chisel through the wall and eat my neighbor.
Yeah, eat your neighbor. Don't eat me. I'm diseased.
Do you have like a succulent neighbor?
I think he's pretty trim, so I think he works out.
It's lean. It's lean muscle.
Yeah. I want to go back. I want to ask you something, MC Frontalot, that you were saying before. Now, I don't know how many people are aware of this. In fact, I had sort of blazed through all of the trades before you pointed this out to me once. But, you know, as you touched on a moment ago, you made a cameo in one of the early books back when Tony Moore was the illustrator.
Yeah.
Issue
3 or 4, maybe?
Issue 3 or 4. If you're reading the trades, it's volume 1, which is the first 6 issues, which Tony Moore illustrated. It's page 60 of that is when you first see your character. MC Frontalot appears as they didn't call them walkers, and they called them roamers. He appears as a roamer in the woods eating a deer. I couldn't believe when you pointed it out to me. There was when I was at your apartment and you showed it to me. I couldn't believe that I didn't notice it because it's so clearly you. It's a short sleeve button down shirt, and there's like the glasses. You're wearing a pocket protector with a name tag that says front.
Yeah, should there be any confusion?
Just in case nobody in the know.
I'm labeled as in a political cartoon.
So how did that come to be? How did you end up as a cameo in this? How do you know Tony Moore, and how did you end up in The Walking Dead?
You know, I live this life where none of my text messaging or IMs or Gmail or like email from ever escapes my grasp. So I guess I could sort of look up how exactly I came into touch with Tony Moore in the first place, but it was definitely internet. And I don't know how I knew that he was so amazing.
Well, was he a fan of yours who reached out to you?
Yeah, it must have been. And he must have shown me what his work was, which back then was like Battle Pope.
Oh, right. Right.
And so then I was like, wow, like he's a real comic book guy. Like he's a for real comic book illustrator. He's really good. And I, in 2000 or two, yeah, probably 2000, maybe 2001, we were finishing up our recording of Young Zombies in Love.
That was the musical that you did with G Minor 7?
That's the rock musical that G Minor and 7 and I wrote, and we were putting it up in San Francisco. And I learned the finer points of computer recording, which I now leverage to create my many rap albums, over like 18-month process of learning as we went while recording this Zombies record. And we finally got done with it, and we were like printing them up and or getting ready to print them up. And I reached out to Tony. But here's the thing that I don't understand is how I knew that he was good at doing zombies, because he had not published. And I mean, this is still like a couple of years before Walking Dead.
Right.
But I hit him up to do the album cover for the Zombies album, and he did this beautiful, like prom dates, zombie illustrations.
I believe I
guy
saw
and this girl
poster at your apartment.
Yeah, there's. I used it on posters and that I just really have no idea how I knew. It was just some feat of psychic wonder
that you just happened to tap him to illustrate a zombie themed thing,
or something I've completely forgotten. Where he was hitting me up and saying, "I love doing zombies," and I was like, "Oh, then." Or something.
Oh boy, do I have a project for you.
But in my depleted and fractured memory, it's just a magical thing where I somehow inspired the very existence of Walking Dead by asking him to do this rock musical original cast recording cover / poster.
Huh.
But anyway, I knew him and we'd worked together on that, and I got him to do my first Frontalot album cover, 2005.
That's Nerdcore Rising?
Yeah.
Yes.
And he also did, probably that same year, MC Stephen Hawking's album cover for MC Stephen Hawking's supposed greatest hits record, although there had been no previous albums. And then he put in that early issue of Walking Dead two zombies in that issue. There were only two. They're hanging out in the woods, and they only run into two zombies, and one of them's me, and one of them's Ken, who's MC Stephen Hawking.
That's right.
And we both get it.
Yeah.
I get it right in the head with an axe.
You get it right in the head.
Yeah. And you totally die a zombie death.
You manage to at least eke out a good solid glub or whatever.
Well, he gets actually.
Vocalization that they
are using. He gets out a growl or two. There's like a raw in there. There's a couple of raws before he glubs to death.
Oh, okay. My dialogue's not super intellectual in that.
No. It's
no. Well, it's and emotional. You know what? And it's not in the comic book either.
That's what I mean. Oh, I see.
I just
that you zinged.
You just consider yourself zanged.
I had
no part in that. I do not condone the zinging of our guests.
No zinging, condoning.
No.
All right.
Okay. Now, all right. So there's so much to say about the comics and the TV show, and this is going to be all over the place. But you did, since I had emailed you and asked you about doing this podcast, I'd mentioned that there was this excellent episodic video game
based on the Walking Dead universe, based on the comic book universe, called from Telltale Games, just called Walking Dead.
Right.
Five episodes released.
Everyone's been talking about, but I had not played yet.
Released whenever Telltale's feels like it. There is no regular schedule. It's not monthly. It's not, you know, bi-monthly.
I would be shocked if they don't release something near Halloween. I mean, I would be shocked if they didn't.
No, that's too close together because one episode came out this month and they have not released two episodes in the same month since it started.
Well, yeah.
They have released four of five episodes. Right. I encouraged you to look into it and play the game. And I did the same with you as I sent you off on your assignment to go consume all of this sad material.
I have. Every single
MC Frontalot, I would love to hear your thoughts about Telltale Games' Walking Dead.
It definitely captures the despair and the kind of unraveling of human society that is so well depicted in the comics and the TV show.
For those not familiar with the game, it follows the lead protagonist is a character named Lee with a checkered past who stumbles upon a lost girl, or a young girl who's lost her parents, named Clementine, and they of course meet up with a band of survivors. This game basically takes place probably shortly before the events in the comic book. They kind of happen in parallel.
Oh, no, well before, because
it's I think it's the first 24 hours or the first it's the first couple of days of the outbreak.
Like, nobody knows Atlanta's going to be lost when he's like taking him to jail as if nothing's wrong, and we're seeing the first like cars racing off to accidents.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, this is literally like the first, I would imagine, the first 48 hours of the outbreak.
Okay.
Yeah.
And whereas the show and the comics starts when Rick wakes up, which is after a month or something.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, no, they start before he wakes up because you see him in his traffic stop get shot.
Oh, right.
So you do have a tiny sliver of time.
But the real story.
Pre-end of the world.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the video game does follow the comic books, or exists in the same world as the comic books. And in the first episode of the game, you do cross paths with some characters. You meet Glenn, you meet Herschel Green, and then from there, the story goes as they create a band of survivors and they are slowly working their way to Savannah.
Yeah.
I was impressed with the game because so many games kind of use as what is now kind of a stock gimmick, this idea that the choices you make influence like the moral landscape of the game. And it's just never true. It's like you either get Sith tattoos on your dude, or you get, you know,
right,
or you get Jedi powers,
wings,
like,
or
whatever.
Yeah.
It's like it's always just two sets of different power ups that are roughly equivalent, but have like a different color scheme.
Correct. It's usually like a binary system.
Yeah.
If you have a game with a moral choice system, you're playing towards a good end or a bad end, and there's no gray area. And this game is much more like a choose your own adventure book. Whereas the decisions you make affect your world the way the characters interact with you.
They
and
really
affect
echo
if they exist in future episodes.
Yeah, they echo through in very interesting ways, including characters dying. Like throughout the series, you run into these spots in the middle of fights where you have time to rescue exactly one of two characters from some zombies, and you got to decide. And the character you don't save is just dead for the rest of the series.
Yeah, and decisions that you've made either in support of or not in support of characters in like the first episode, you know, played out big time in the fourth episode for me, you know, where there was a choice to sort of rally together to go on this one last outing. And I had people like back out on me and go, no, dude, you didn't support me on this point and this point, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
They hold stuff against you and your sort of trust meter is behind the scenes going up and down.
It's so ominous at times when you make seemingly, you know, inconsequential decisions based on dialogue. If you have four options of dialogue that you can say to a character, it always would give me the chills when I'll say, like, pick something that seems pretty benign. And then that text comes up on the screen that says, Clementine will remember that you said that. Every time I'm like, no. I can't rewind this thing because this is a video game.
I found myself always speaking honestly with the child.
Yeah,
I would
too.
Never reassure
too,
her
actually.
About things that I wasn't sure about. There were lots of opportunities to like tell her things were going to be okay, or she'd say, you know, is it safe? Are any more of them going to come? Like things like that.
True.
I tried to be a pretty straight shooter throughout. Like I tried to be as honest as I could pretty much throughout.
I could tell early that was going to be a decent and a decent strategy and one that would be, I thought, the easiest to be consistent with. But I found myself lying to non-player characters by mistake because I didn't know the correct answer to the thing they wanted to know. Like the first time, I think it was Herschel, is like, what were you doing leaving, or like, where were you driving when you got in that car crash? And I didn't know because I forgot whatever the establishing shot was at the very, very, you know, it was like two episodes ago or something. And I'm like, oh, geez, I was just driving around. And then he looks at me, he's like, oh, that's that black man's lying.
I am thoroughly enjoying the games. I am very excited for the fifth episode to see how all of this plays out, because I didn't think I was going to like it, because I'm traditionally licensed games don't tend to be done very well. You know, they're either really quick and dirty sort of hack jobs just to cash in a quick buck. But I am every moment I'm just thoroughly impressed by the writing. I'm thoroughly impressed by the simple yet pretty robust mechanics of this sort of morality choice dialogue that you have with any given character at any given point. And it's a wonderful next step evolution of the point and click adventure, which I've never really been a fan of, but I am loving this.
I'd say it's a very sort of casualized version. All of those Telltale games are very sort of simplified versions of point and clicks. Like the environments are not usually very big. The amount of like space you can cover on your feet's not very big. The number of things you can click on are not big, and they're all well labeled.
Yeah, which is partly the reason why when the game doesn't live up to being a game, and those moments are so glaring. Like there are moments in the game where you have to shoot zombies. And it becomes a first-person shooter in those very, like, very short moments.
I loved those. You didn't like those?
Oh, I hated those.
Oh, I thought they were
because
intense.
It's a terrible first-person shooter.
Which is why it's great, because it's not a first-person shooter.
Yeah, it's not a shooter. It's like
it's clumsy and it's awkward, and you don't really.
It's this very difficult
when it happens.
Moment,
when it happens to you in the game, you're not expecting it. And no, you don't really know how to do it. You don't have like a targeting mechanism.
Not
you just
at
kind
all.
Of like you kind of have fumble to, like, with your controller, and that's how these.
I don't know.
Non-military folks would handle this.
But the thing is, Telltale does such a wonderful job of giving you all the information you need when you need it. Like having those little icons over things that you highlight the thing on. Uh-huh. And it does it so wonderfully well. And without any kind of verbal communication, like you just see and go, oh, right, that's the thing I got to do. And then it takes it away from you.
Yeah, because you'd be about to be eaten by a zombie and you're
I don't
freaking
know.
Out.
To me, those were some of the most frustrating moments of the game.
Yeah. Well, they're meant to be.
Well, I guess maybe I was just so terrible at it. It stopped being...
Wasn't fun anymore.
Yeah, because I had failed out of it so many times. It stopped being a moment of storytelling. It started being about me fighting with the mechanics of the game.
See, I thought those were the most fun because they were the only really challenging bits. I also really loved, like, there's several sneaking around sections.
Yeah, those are great.
You'll, like, reach your head over something and the screen will start... turning red and the music will start kind of almost subliminally freaking out on you, and
the
zombie
will slowly
be turning its head towards you, and you have to get down before it sees you.
Yeah, I like those moments a lot too.
Yeah,
another element that I like of the game is that when you finish the episode, it'll give you these stats that'll show you all of the decisions that you made, and it'll rank them with how popular they were with other people. And I want people to play this game, not because I'm shilling for Telltale, but I just think it's really fun. And if you're a fan of Walking Dead, you're going to love this game. And if you haven't, I don't want to spoil things because there's so much that happens. But there's a major decision to make at the end of episode 4. Granted, episode 5 is not out yet, but there's a major decision that you have to choose to make. And I was pretty surprised because I feel most of the times...
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Most of the times my decisions are pretty in line, or are pretty popular with the people that they show.
Wait, I don't know what you're talking about. Tell me what it is and then beep it out.
Okay, but the decision... the decision
Is it the bell tower?
No, just say it on the mic and beep it out.
It's the bell tower moment.
No, shut the fuck up. It's the decision... It's the decision to... So I decided that, and when I decided that, when I saw the stats at the end, it told me that you and 17% of players...
Really?
Did you guys...
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Oh my god, I'll bet that's like one of the last decisions.
Are we spoiling too much?
We're going to bleep all that out. That was for us.
The only the other thing that I really was impressed with in the games is how insanely gory
Yeah.
It is. Like when you had to chop off dude's leg because he got bit when he's in the... Or he hasn't gotten bit yet. He's in the bear trap.
Yeah.
And it's like, in most video games, you click on the thing that says, yeah, go ahead and chop that dude's leg in half. And then it's like, all right, dink. It's, leg is now in two portions. But here you like got to lift the axe up to bring it down on the knee.
Like five strokes.
Then you got to lift it up again.
They make you do
and
that
he's like screaming while you do it.
And you have to keep seeing Lee's face and you're watching him react to it. And it's just killing him. Yeah,
That's something that Telltale does really, really well because it makes you live with your decision. Like in the moment at the start of episode 3 where they're heading back to the pharmacy to clear it out. And there was that choice about the woman who got bit to put her out of her misery or not. I chose not to. I chose to let her be I chose to let her occupy the zombie so we had more time to clear out the pharmacy.
Which half of people do.
Yeah, and, that's what I did too.
And she screamed the entire time.
Yeah, it's true.
The entire time you're cleaning out the pharmacy, you hear her screaming, oh God, help me, help me. Ah, the entire time you're cleaning out the pharmacy and there's a clock, you know, and there's a winding down clock of you trying to grab as much as you can until she finally succumbs and then they start coming after you. And the choice of not shooting her, I had to live with.
Yeah.
For that entire segment of the game, and it was horrible.
I agree. I remember turning the volume down during it because it was like it just never. It was, and it's such a long exploration scene of that pharmacy trying to go through and find the things that you need, and this it just didn't stop. You just had to listen to her scream repeatedly because I didn't want to shoot her because I didn't want to draw any more noise.
Did you guys make all the same decisions?
I don't think we did.
Well, no, obviously not about the one thing.
I seem to have made all the different ones.
I kept a secret, and you didn't. You told them. You were honest about that.
Yeah, I tried to be as honest as I could the entire time. I did lie a couple of times that high school kid. The episode where they're on the farm. I kept a lot of that close to the vest with those people.
What about the
when high school kid sucks? If I play that again, I'm totally letting him get killed.
Oh yeah. There was an option to save him in episode 4, and I saved him. And
me
even
too.
After I did,
Well, I'm glad I did because I ended up losing what's his name?
Kenny.
I lost Kenny as a friend because of stuff that I had done in episode 1. You know, and so he wouldn't help me, and so I had. I'm glad I saved the kid. Otherwise, I had nobody.
You know what I did in the last episode? I found the people. There was the band of survivors, the cancer patients.
Yeah.
You found them, and I lied to the guy and told him we had medical supplies to get him to come back. Did you guys do that to him?
No, I talked him into it with honesty.
Not me. I lied to him. I totally manipulated him. Because that's how I am in real life. I told you to come over here tonight to record a podcast.
You said there was going to be drugs and beer.
Oh, there was beer?
Well, I mean, two of one.
I need a beer.
One of two.
I'll get you another one.
Yeah, right. We'll get some beers.
To go back to the TV show, here's one criticism I have about the TV show. Are you guys done talking about the game?
Yeah.
I'm done talking
about
it. Sure. I have one major criticism of the TV show, but you go first.
All right, here's my criticism. There's somebody that I think could dial back the intensity a little bit, and it's not a character on the show, and it's not the writers of the show, and it's not the director of the show. Look, I get it. It's a television show about the end of the world. It's very emotional. The music is very emotional. It's a thriller. You're on the edge of your seat, biting your nails all the time. Even the main title card is like, it's in that color of sepia that every bathroom and every survival horror video game you've ever played is. Every element of this that is presented to you tells you that you're in a scary world. The AMC voiceover guy could dial it back a little bit. It's so overwhelming because it's like they're constantly plugging stuff. AMC is very proud of this property because it has made AMC what it is.
Yeah.
But it's like every time they go to a break,
don't they have Mad Men?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, all right, fine.
Don't they have Breaking Bad?
Yeah, but they're really parading this like Walking Dead around like they're really proud of
it. That's the one that's on right now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's like every time they come back from something, it's constantly like the amount of like of scene chewing that this voiceover guy does. It's seriously.
Previously on AMC's The Walking Dead.
Let me try.
Previously on AMC's The Walking Dead. Always. Every time. Next time on a...
They kind of have to do that, don't they? I mean, they kind of...
Win this Ford Focus from an episode of AMC's
The Walking Dead.
Well, I mean, you
can't... Not available on Dish.
No. That guy gets the not available on Dish line, too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can't really fault them for wanting to, like, set some kind of gravitas, some kind of, like, pathos into their...
I just find it comical. The guys.
He pretends to be a drunk boss at a Christmas party when he's doing the announcements for Mad Men.
It's all like you can hear ice clinking in a glass. True.
Yeah, he pretends to be British for Downton Abbey's in between announcements.
Here's my problem with the show, and maybe you guys can back me up and either support me or call me out on the carpet for it. And I'm going to preface this by saying, yeah, I know I'm about to nitpick the logic of a zombie show. No. But there is a moment, I question the physics of this world in that the walkers are decaying. They are rotting corpses, right? Which is why you can basically hit them in the head with a stuffed rabbit and their skulls cave in, right? They are frail. They are brittle. They are falling apart.
Right, but they're also incredibly strong and can tear apart a healthy human.
That's the... But the thing is, like, how the fuck is that possible? Like, when Dale bites it, and he bites it in the most ugliest, gruesome way possible.
Spoiler alert, Dale bites it.
Yeah, Dale bites it. He's laying there holding a zombie up, and the zombie... basically being held above him manages to push his fingers into his abdomen and rip his abdomen open. So now his entrails. Now me, as a human being, as a healthy, relatively healthy person, there is no way on this God's green earth I could rip open Schaefer's belly with my bare hands.
I have a theory.
Please lay it on me.
You know how all the living people are also infected?
Yes.
Yes.
Perhaps that infection is causing their bodies, particularly their torsos, to experience pre-death zombie frailness.
No, no. That's a cop-out.
Perhaps their flesh has already deteriorated a bit. They're not like falling apart.
No, they're not
like falling off the bone or anything.
But they've become tender and well marinated.
They're like the vampires in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah, exactly.
they're mushy.
No, I realize that theory's dumb, and I think all we need to say is...
I call shenanigans on your theory, and I call shenanigans on the physics of this world.
All we really need to say is that all barriers are psychological. Your skin only separates you. Your innards from the world.
Because you think
of it as a barrier. And the fences around the prison keep the zombies out, but only as long as you believe in them.
No, look, I get it. They need the zombies to be a constant threat, but I just find it difficult to see these slow lumbering, can't lift their own arms because their muscles are no longer there, but yet somehow or another they can push through barriers and they can rip open guts. I just don't.
Well, hold on. Those are two different things. They can push through barriers when they're in sheer numbers, because that's actually pretty solid science.
Okay, I'll give you that. I will give you that.
But tearing open somebody's abdomen. Look, I don't want to have this argument. This is like some comic book men.
We don't know that it wasn't a particularly sharp zombie.
Yeah, you know what? That maybe their fingers have become pointy like razors.
That one. Yeah,
like they no longer, like that particular zombie didn't have flesh on their fingertips and it was just bone.
It had to claw its way out of where it was stuck in the river. Remember when the little kid neglected to shoot it?
Right.
And maybe it did that by sort of falling over and accidentally sharpening all of its digits against a nearby river.
I don't want to belabor the point. I'm just saying that the physics of this world, as entertaining as the show is, as brilliantly written as the show is, sometimes the physics of the world just make my head spin.
Well, that's terrific. But at the end of the day, it was a really graphic, shocking scene.
It was
great. And it was kind of an homage to a kind of iconic scene from George Romero's Day of the Dead, where they are in the underground laboratory compound and one of the military guys is surrounded by zombies and they tear him open. I feel like that's exactly what they were going for.
Is the Shaun of the Dead scene where the dickish character goes through the pub window near the end and gets his entrails removed. Is that like a reference to
that? That could be it. I mean, I think every zombie film has that one moment
of entrail removal of a living victim.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's all love letters to Romero eventually.
Of all the dead movies, I think the original Day of the Dead is the one I've watched the fewest number of times.
We're going to get an angry email about this, but like it's clearly the weakest of them. There really isn't a whole lot of premise to it. I feel the first two movies had...
Well, they're both very political.
They're not very nuanced, but there is social commentary contained in Night of the Living Dead as well as Dawn of the Dead. A little awkward, a little ham-fisted, a little eighth grader essay-ish.
But you know
Day
what?
Of
I mean,
the, Day of the Dead
he
is
made
in a
them
really
very cheaply, so it's not like, you know.
Well, that doesn't.
It's not like he could afford nuance in the writing.
He didn't write them cheaply. That's
touche.
The third one, I feel, is the thinnest of them. It takes place over the course of a few hours, and there's just like, you know, that you get like a handful of archetypes that you can root for dying, and it's just it feels kind of.
I think at this point, like Romero, thank you, is credited with creating the genre, and then they're just. The next generation took it up and made it better, I think. You know, he created the landscape, and then all of his directors just made zombie movies the way that they are entertained.
He wrote the rules, and everybody's still obeying.
Yeah. Right. All right, he came up with cannibalism being the defining feature.
Right, the flesh, brains.
And
or,
that it's an infection that is passed to you from biting. Because even in Night of the Living Dead, you see... one of the early victims of the movie, you see her in a shot later as a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he created that this cannibalism, that it's an infection, and that you stop them by either cutting off the head or destroying the brain.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And those have... It's just scripture ever since.
Right. What are you guys' favorite zombie movies?
That's a good one. I'm gonna say... I mean, I don't want to say anything that's like terribly obvious. Night of the Living Dead is a great movie, and
Original Night is on my top five.
It's brilliant. I would like to sing the praises of a zombie movie that I feel is never given enough credit in the zombie genre, and that is the 1985 film Return of the Living
Dead.
That's
in my top five also.
Which is not a George Romero film. It is not affiliated with George Romero.
It's a tribute. It's a love letter.
It is a love letter before the zombie mythos became so like prevalent before everybody wanted to do like zombie pictures.
And it's hilarious without being totally jokey.
It's not. No, it's no, it is. That's true.
That's right.
There is some comic relief, but it's
hilarious.
It's hilarious. There are some,
send more paramedics.
There are some legitimately scary moments in that movie.
It's a real horror movie all the way through.
It's
a real horror movie. That's what's so great about its funniness.
Yeah, because
it's not a comedy movie.
No, it gives you like bits to laugh at, that like nervous laughter, so you can like catch your breath before the slimy black zombie in the basement.
If you kids haven't seen this movie, it is about a bunch of teenagers, one of whom has a job at the Dead Things warehouse,
a medical supply warehouse.
Medical supply warehouse,
conveniently
filled
located
with
next to
corpses,
a morgue and a cemetery.
Across the street from a morgue, with a cemetery in between, just about the perfect spot for a zombieism outbreak.
That's right.
I
forgot about that.
It starts with one in a army barrel in the basement.
That's right. That's right.
And it eventually is implied to spread out into the whole world, but it's localized to the neighborhood full of corpses.
And I think that's like all of the a lot of the ingredients of a zombie film always involve, you know, young good-looking kids in some kind of like isolated environment.
Uh-huh.
And nearby a readily source of bodies.
I like the Return of the Living Dead. It took some liberties with, and granted it was early, but it's before there were, you know, 400 zombie movies. But they took some liberties with the rules of zombies. Like, I know a lot of people complained about Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead remake because zombies run and zombies can't run. And that's, they were scary. And 28 Days Later, also the zombies ran. Zombies ran all over the place in Return of the Living Dead. So they took some liberties there. The zombies could talk, too.
A little bit.
They
send
can
more cops,
send
more paramedics.
More paramedics.
They had the one tied down that explained why they eat brains.
It hurts.
Yeah. She explained the whole thing.
She couldn't talk very well.
No, but she explained enough. And here's another thing that's great about it that doesn't happen enough in zombie movies. Or, for that matter, superhero movies.
Whoa. Where are you going with this?
This zombie movie takes place
in a world where zombie movies exist.
Oh,
which is always
right.
Nice because they're like at the beginning of the movie, the two characters, the guy, this kid who's, it's his first day at the medical, at the Dead Things warehouse, and he's being trained by the old guy, and he starts talking to him about Night of the Living Dead. And when they're even talking about it, when they later on are faced with a zombie, they know that you have to stab it in the brain because that's what happens.
Because that's
in that
what
movie.
Happens in the movies. Yeah.
And every time, like you see a zombie movie, even The Walking Dead, they're always like,
"What are we gonna do?
Those things out there,
right?
Like." I can't imagine that it takes me out of it all the time because I'm like, how do you live in a world where zombie movies don't exist? It's kind of like when you see a superhero movie and like Spider-Man yeah. webs somebody to the wall and the cops are all like scratching their heads like, who is this guy? Like nobody's going like, holy shit, it's a superhero.
Right. That's funny.
So Night of the Living Dead or Return of the Living Dead takes place in a world where zombie movies
exist. I kind of like that some of these stories take place where these things don't exist. I kind of like that because
some of them, all of them,
all of them.
Yeah, well,
generally,
yeah.
They never call them zombies. In the
they
comic
don't even
book,
have the word zombie in the Walking Dead TV show.
In the comic book, they call them some of the characters call them zombies. Mm-hmm. They use it there, but the yeah. television show, it's always yeah, yeah. Again, it's always walkers. But in the book, some of them call them zombies, and I always liked it when they did because I'm like, oh, somebody recognizes it.
True.
So, what are the other greatest zombie movies?
What do you got? What do you got? Agree
those,
with me? Return
those
of
two are in my top five for sure. I would say Cemetery Man.
With Rupert nice. Everett. Yeah. I love Cemetery Man.
That one I think is not going to be on enough people's top tens.
That did not make my top list, but that is a good zombie film.
You should really check it out. Yeah. Dead Alive.
Dead Alive.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
With the lawnmower taking the busload of zombie Boy Scouts.
With the evil zombie baby. With
that's right. I forgot about the zombie
with
baby.
With the beautiful 1950s New Zealand setting.
True. Do you know the...
With the gypsy woman who has got the understanding of the terrible future in store.
That's right.
That's a very
right.
classic scene for these
you know,
kind of movies.
A little fun fact, there's the little pre-scene of that movie that sets up the sort of prologue that happens before the credits.
With the Sumatran monkey.
Exactly. Do you remember the title thing? Because when it announces the location, it says Skull Island.
Skull Island.
Which is where King Kong takes
course.
Place. So it's a,
well.
Which is funny because Peter Jackson... went on to make King Kong.
Turned out he likes King Kong.
He always wanted
it all
to...
comes full circle, yeah. doesn't it?
One of my favorite movies, let me finish my five.
Yeah, please.
One of my favorite movies of all time is Evil Dead 2, and I feel like there's an argument to be made that that's not technically a zombie movie.
I wouldn't call that a zombie film.
I think anytime you've got demons causing the zombie epidemic, and when people can move between being zombies and back to being okay again.
Yeah, I don't consider the Evil Dead films.
I feel like that's not a zombie.
Well,
movie,
it doesn't really happen
those
to
are,
his
those
Ash's
are monster
girlfriend.
Films.
She is definitely dead.
She dies
and resurrected.
And is resurrected by demons.
But the blonde dude
like turns evil for a bit and comes back. Ash turns evil for a bit and comes back.
Yeah, because they're possessed. They're not You know what I mean? They haven't
right.
been... They're not
so
rotting corpses.
So there's a lot more going on than the yeah. one thing that is always going on in all zombie movies, which is that there is right. a large, dangerous, communicable zombie epidemic that nobody knows exactly where right. it came from or why it exists.
The dead are rising from the grave and turning into cannibals.
Nobody... Right. And this is key. In every sort of canonical zombie movie, there is no definitive explanation of why. Some people will theorize,
right.
or you can point to like, oh, it came out of a government barrel, but where'd the government get it? It's not clear. Did they just find it and put it in a barrel?
Yeah.
Did they develop it?
What was the government doing with it?
Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah, even the Walking Dead, like they have some idea of how it manifests, but they don't know where it came from.
There's been no clue
where
it came from.
No. He basically... He equates it to a mutated strain of meningitis, but that is it.
Wait, who does
science dude in that
the science dude
complex?
In the CDC?
Yeah.
You say basically it acts like meningitis, but that's literally
they know how it works. That's not an explanation.
Exactly, that's what
that
I'm saying.
That was the safest place they went ever in that yeah. TV show. They totally should have stuck around there.
And they're like, oh no,
blew it up.
We found the one safe place that was inhabited by
and they had
a suicidal
one
guy.
Good night in that place, and
they had wine.
They had wine and attempted sexual assault. Yeah, one good night.
I guess
not if your name's Lori Grimes.
I guess that place was going to become worthless when the generators ran out, but like they could have used it as a base and collected fuel or rewired it to something.
Yeah, but that guy had to blow the
whole much disease in there.
Mm. Oh well.
I'm going to put a movie on here called Dead Snow.
I tried to watch that. I couldn't get very far.
Dead, it's so good. It's a Norwegian zombie film.
I already like it.
Made...
It's the zombie Nazis, right?
Yeah, basically, this was made during the height of the zombie craze, which was just a few years ago. And he wanted to make a zombie film as an homage to some of his favorite directors of that genre, but everybody was making zombie films, and so he wanted to differentiate his somehow, and so he thought, well, what's scarier than zombies... Nazi zombies. And so it's the premise is you have these good, you know, a bunch of good looking kids out in the middle of nowhere trying to have some fun, and they have one grizzled old man telling about the legend of
always.
There's always
yeah, there's the one grizzled guy. There's a
goddamn kid.
There's a legend around here about some bad juju and some legendary Nazi gold. And then all hell breaks loose, basically.
By the way, for the record, Nazi gold, the most delicious of gold.
Go on. I don't even know if that's racist or not. But, instead of, these Nazis are actually almost intelligent. They're Nazi intelligent. Like, they have tactics. Like, they have, you know, they attack in some kind of, like, military precision.
It's like you have zombie blitzkrieg.
Right, exactly.
They are still Germans, after but all. They may be the undead, but they are still German soldiers.
But so. I will say this. It seems to me like their zombie outbreak is more supernatural than a virus, because there's some cursed gold, some sort of, like, it's almost like Pirates of the Caribbean kind of a hook, right, where, you know, they stole the gold and now they're cursed forever, kind of a thing,
right?
But it's scary as hell, it's funny as hell, there's some, it's genuinely a really good point of view on the zombie sort of genre, and I can't recommend it highly enough.
Well, I will give it another try. I watched the first 15 minutes and felt bored and turned it off.
It's a slow burn. It's a slow burn up until the Nazis show up, and then all hell breaks loose.
Right.
That was the thing I was going to say earlier that I didn't, which is about when you were talking about you were skeptical about the video game because video games that are tie-ins to other media properties tend to be rushed,
right,
half-assed.
Right.
Basically, any game that's based on a superhero movie that comes out in the summer, they're going, right, to be crappy games.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And although the Walking Dead Telltale's game is not that, the Activision game that's coming out most definitely will be.
I am not going to touch that thing with a 10-foot pole.
Have you seen any of the stuff of that? It's a first-person shooter where you play as the Dixon brothers. You play as Merle and Daryl.
And it's a first person, like, one's a crossbow and the other one's like something, I don't know, something
else. It's a first person shooter with zombies, because that's what the video game market needed.
Yeah, we have perfectly serviceable first person shooter zombie games.
Yes.
We don't need one based on characters from a television show. And so that game is going to be, and it's Activision game, which...
Also, and it's a full retail game. It's not even like a digital download. It's a full $60 disc-based game.
There's a Facebook game of Walking Dead. Have you seen that?
No. Yeah, I've not played it. I haven't played any Facebook games.
At this point, I think I'm kind of done with The Walking Dead. I'm going to take a very long break. I'm probably not going to watch the third season until probably this time next year. I will play the video game, though, because I am invested, because I do want to see how all my choices pan out at this point. And I love what Telltale is doing. I think, that, as far as I'm concerned, they can do no wrong with this 5-arc story. And to be honest, I want them to do another one. I would love there to be another story in this world, with another group of survivors, with another protagonist. My wish for the fifth episode, and this is going to be a shot in the dark, is for Clem to actually find her parents. That's what I wish.
Oh yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen.
That would be inconsistent with Robert Kirkman's writing.
Yes, that would be completely inconsistent, because that would actually mean that there's hope in this world he's created, and of which there is none. What about you guys?
Here's a prediction and a hope that I have for the comic books. In the comic books where they are currently, the characters are all living in Alexandria, their gated community.
Uh-huh.
And they are now up against a new enemy force called the Saviors, led by a sadist named Negan, who in issue 100 brutally killed beloved character Glenn. Now, so far, as they've been building up towards this story about this conflict with this band called the Saviors, it's felt very much like Woodbury all over again. And at first it kind of got a little disappointed, because I felt like they're treading over old material. They don't have anything else to do now, so they've been on the run, they found a safe place, they've dealt with a lot of conflicts, and now what else are we going to do? Let's give them another band of another angry community that's going to try to take them over. So it felt very much like that, and I felt it was a little bit tired, but it's started to evolve into its own thing. They're a much bigger threat than Woodbury ever was, because there's more of them. And
there's more survivors who they're threatening as well, because there's now a whole network of survivor communities.
There is
these savior guys are menacing.
The Hilltop, who is are now still, allies to the Alexandria community.
Is this still in the South? Is this still like in the...
Oh, they haven't traveled very far.
Okay, so they're still like Atlanta panhandle kind of area.
No, I think it's Alexandria, Virginia.
Oh, okay.
Because they made that trek to try and get to D.C.
Right, when they picked up Sergeant Ford and the liar and the hot woman. I don't remember her name. So anyway, there's this big conflict going on, and our heroes are down, and they're down and out right now. So obviously it's building. There's going to be a huge blowout, and this sadistic character of Negan, who is even more sadistic than the governor ever was, he is going to get his in a glorious way. And hopefully it's not handled quite as torture porny as Michonne's revenge against the governor was in the books. But something spectacular...
I think it probably will be pretty torture porny.
Something spectacular vengeance is going to befall this terrible, terrible man. And okay. I just cannot wait.
Here's what I would suggest to Mr. Kirkman.
If you're listening,
who's surely floundering trying to figure out how to resolve this conflict, what am I going to do? If all of these nonviolent folks are giving them food all the time, why can't they just poison them very easily?
Damn.
Wow. That's pretty simple and... Wow. All right.
You just solved a conflict for this band of survivors. Yeah, that's...
Yeah. I doubt it would go that route.
It's not violent enough for the conflict.
No, clearly. It's not nearly violent enough. Also, it doesn't... Like, if they poison them, then they'll ultimately become walkers. You know what I mean? Like...
Yeah, but...
They're not... That's not a problem, then.
Walkers aren't mean. No. They're like animals.
And right. They've all learned, at this point, they've all learned they've in the comics, they've practically become background noise, because they're all so adept at dealing with them as a problem. That
okay. Wow.
Them turning into walkers is not.
At some point, I'm going to read the comic books, but not for a while. I'm too sad inside to keep doing that. I just can't.
You poor, delicate thing.
It's like my humanity cries after every goddamn Walking Dead thing I consume. It's just, I can't do it anymore. I'm depressed. What do you got, Mr. Frontalot? Any predictions? Any wish lists? Anything you'd like to see, or you think it's going to happen?
Well, that was my wish list item. I'd like to see. I don't know what I'd like to see. I'm excited each week letting the show just kind of flow over me. It's like a good hour of TV.
Yeah, I really have to applaud the TV series for being inspired by the comic book, but not being afraid to tell its own story. And I really admire it for that.
And I like how the third season so far has had lots of zombies.
True.
It is action-packed.
The first two seasons had... David Reese pointed this out to me when we were discussing it in, like, February. He's like, yeah, I kind of like that show, but it kind of doesn't have enough zombies, like too much talking about feelings, not enough zombies.
There is a tremendous amount of that, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of got used to The Walking Dead being this very slow-paced story about the human condition, and then I saw the first episode of the third season, and I blinked, it was over. I mean, they were just killing zombies left and right, and it was all about getting in there, getting the job done, survival, you know, weapons, medicine, food, you know. So
that was a great Rick Grimes impression.
I like that.
Has the success of this TV show inspired this other one that I've heard about where it's the end of the world because there's no electricity anymore or something?
I feel that show is definitely,
yeah, I think it's a very definite response. Yeah.
What is that show?
Revolution.
Is it on TV?
From what I understand, it was like a huge NBC like show. Electromagnetic pulse took out the Earth's grid, and there's no more electricity.
There's no candle store, and there's no.
I haven't seen an episode yet, but
it seems like there would be. There's no infrastructure.
It does seem like a direct response to the. I'm going to say it again. Cultural phenomenon that The Walking Dead is.
I feel like if the problem were only that electricity didn't work anymore, the government would still. Exercise a fair amount of power over the country.
I think that this world probably has all of the same problems. It just doesn't have The Walking Dead, but there's still probably bandits and looting and
yeah. Surely you'd have some of that initially. I feel like the U.S. with the military and the National Guard has a whole system of protocols for how to maintain control over the populace that they developed in the 40s or whenever electricity was less reliable.
You know, I haven't watched the show, but perhaps it follows a bunch of characters that are, say, in a remote rural area. So the government is probably going to get to them last. They're probably in New York, Boston, and Los Angeles.
I'm going to watch the show, and then I'll report back next time.
Please do.
Yeah.
Thanks. That's really thoughtful of you.
That is. Yeah. That means I may not have to watch it at all.
No, no, no.
Yeah, you'll come back and you'll be like, meh,
yeah,
done.
Yeah. All you got to do is just listen to my one sentence summary and I will let you know if it's worth watching.
You should start a podcast and you can tell us all about it.
You got it. I'm going to call it the Epic Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been MC Frontalot.
That was me.
Would like to thank you very much for stopping by.
My pleasure.
It was very nice to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Do you have anything? Do you have anything coming up?
Yeah, you want to plug something? Or I know you just came off your huge sort of like summertime thing.
My little summertime tour of the cons.
Right.
I found out I can announce that I'm playing my 13th PAX in March.
13th?
Yeah, can you believe it?
Wow. Good gravy.
That'll be PAX East, and there's still a couple of tickets left.
Right. There's no more three-day passes, but there are day passes.
There are day passes, yeah. Although they don't tell me whether I play Saturday or Friday night until right before.
But 13, wow, congratulations.
Thanks. Lucky 13. And then there's really exciting other stuff happening next year that's secret. There's a super awesome thing happening in January that's secret. Can't tell you.
So a whole lot of nothing you can share.
Working basically. On a new record, and I'm going to finish that live record also. And so there'll be two new records in the spring, I think. New videos. Video for I'll Form the Head and another one for Kernel Panic, both from the current album Solved.
Wonderful.
Within the next couple months.
Awesome. So you're in luck, people who contributed to the Kickstarter. You're getting that I'll Form the Head video, right? Because that was the deal, right?
They get to watch it a little earlier. Everyone gets to watch it.
But I thought that was part of the thing. If you made past a certain point, part of the amount that you were shooting for like included a music video. But if you got like to a certain level, if you made that much money, that you would like...
Do another one.
You'll do a video and for I'll Form the Head. I'll Form the Head was like the third video.
Third
on
video,
that list.
Yeah.
So you've made it. So you're going to
third
make
and
it.
Fourth videos
so
happening.
Thank you, America, because I, for one, would love to see a music video for I'll Form the Head.
True.
Carly Minardo is directing it, and it looks just like some old Voltron. It's pretty rad.
Dude.
Oh, I want to see it now.
Yeah, me too.
All right.
Well, dude,
thank you so much for coming out all the way from Brooklyn to beautiful Astoria.
Astoria Queens.
This has been great, man. Thanks so much for coming out.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much to MC Frontalot for being our guest this month.
Oh, so good.
Of course, you can find more about him at frontalot.com.
Frontalot!
So what do you say, Lugo? We do the plugs and we get out of here?
Let's do some plugs.
All right.
Let's see. Halloween. Halloween is coming up. If you love Halloween as much as I do, as much as Shape of the Dark Lord does, then Epic Win Burlesque is doing a huge Halloween show in New York City. It's going to be at Our Bar on October 31st. It's going to be in two parts. It's going to be a huge blowout, spooky extravaganza burlesque show hosted by you, nonetheless, Mr. Schaefer the Dark Lord.
That's me.
And then the second part is going to be a dead man's dance party with costume contests and stupid drinks with dumb sounding names. It's going to be fucking fantastic.
Not only is that going to be the best Halloween party in New York City, it is also Epic Win Burlesque co-producer Mary Sin's birthday party.
That's true.
So
yes,
come
yes.
wish Mary a very scary happy birthday.
And bring her a present, which is usually in the form of money.
On Friday, November 9th, I will be performing at Otto's Shrunken Head in New York City.
Oh, dude, really?
Yes, I will be performing with Uncle Monsterface.
I love those guys.
As well as a band called Little Big. That is on Friday, November 9th, Otto's Shrunken Head in New York.
I don't know Little Big. I'll be very excited to know them. I have a show November 3rd. Epic Win Burlesque is going to be in Washington, D.C. at the Red Palace. So if you are in the Washington, D.C. area, and I'm looking at you, Virginia, Baltimore people, come on out to the Red Palace. We're doing two shows in one night. So we're going to have an 8 o'clock show and we're going to have it a 10:30 show. You can stay for both shows because we're going to have different acts in each one. But come on out and support us out there. The DC shows are always a fucking amazing time. I love going out to DC. Also, two nights we're going to be doing Lord of the Rings. We're going to be doing a burlesque tribute to Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Sexy. And that's going to be November 16th and 17th, I believe. Check the website, which is epicwinburlesque.com. All of this information is on there. And every single one of these shows has advanced tickets available. So buy them now and buy them often, because we do tend to sell out.
I will not be involved in the Lord of the Rings shows, but I will be in attendance both nights.
Damn right you will. So, why? Because?
Because on Wednesday, November 14th, it is my birthday.
Happy, happy birthday. Happy, happy birthday. Happy, happy birthday.
Or as I would like to refer to it as Schaefer Day. And so is every other day. That's right, I did that. So please, if you want to help me celebrate my birthday, please send me gifts.
Sure.
Send me links to free stuff. Make deposits in my PayPal account.
Start making all kinds of like Ermagerd memes.
If you really want to make me happy on my birthday, I'm going to try to get this started. Please be sure at some point on Wednesday, November 14th, that you wear purple clothing. And
You're going to make it National Purple Day?
Yep. And please post a photo of yourself on Facebook on Wednesday,
awesome.
November 14th, wearing your purples.
That would be, I'm totally doing that. I am totally, totally doing that. Also, wait, you also have a show on that Sunday, right?
Yes, and that Sunday, which would be Sunday the 18th.
Right.
I will be hosting Kitty Nights Burlesque at Mug Lounge in the East Village in New York City.
Sweet. I can't wait.
It's going to be a good time.
November is the end of October into November. It's going to be crazy.
Sometime between now and then, we'll figure out what our theme will be for next month's show.
No, that's not true. We know what our theme is going to be.
We don't yet.
Oh, well, we have ideas, I guess.
We'll work something out
all
right. for them.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, from all of us to all of you, this has been fun, and this has been the third episode of the Epic Podcast. My name is Nelson Lugo.
And my name is Schaefer the Dark Lord.
We'll see you next time.
Happy Halloween. Bye. The Epic Podcast is brought to you by Nerdy Show. All programming on the Nerdy Show Network is listener-supported. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, you can show your support by telling a friend or going to nerdyshow.com and clicking the support button. Even a small contribution gets you cool nerdy perks and allows you to take part in our monthly support drive contests. For more episodes of the Epic Podcasts, videos, contests, and other nerdy programming, visit nerdyshow.com. Subscribe to all our latest episodes via the iTunes Store. And remember to follow us on Facebook, Tumblr, and Twitter at Nerdy Show to keep up to date on the latest Nerdy Show news.